We are welcoming back to the show Chelsea Infinity Gonzalez, who is the Public Policy and Advocacy Director at the ACLU of Connecticut. And as we reported, Senate Bill 397, which really tackles privacy, accountability, immigrant protections in our state, it actually had a full bill signing ceremony by the governor after both chambers passed it. And the ACLU applauding that decision. In particular, the last time I had Chelsea on the show, we didn't know if this was going to pass or not, but now it has. And so I wanted to kind of come back around and talk to Chelsea about one part of this bill in particular, which has to do with license plate readers. So Chelsea, welcome back to the show and thank you for your time. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm doing very well. Good morning.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. So Senate Bill 397, an act concerning democracy and government accountability, and this covers a lot. It covers ICE operations in our state. It really looks at privacy safeguards. And in particular, something you and I talked about the last time you were on the show was the license plate readers. And so I wanted to talk about how this bill, now law, will effectively work. So before we get there, Chelsea, talk about from the ACLU standpoint why you feel like this bill is particularly important for Connecticut regarding license plate readers.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that question. So this is the version that passed. It's a really clear set of statewide rules for how license plate reader technology can be used, and it does a few different things. It preserves core law enforcement uses, so it essentially police can still use the tool as they currently do now, right, to find things like stolen cars, locate missing people, support active criminal investigations when they have reasonable suspicion. It allows them to still use this for legitimate public safety reasons. What it also does is it sets a 21-day limit on how long data can be stored or retained. It allows it to be kept longer if it's tied to a real case or a warrant or even a prosecution, which is also something that I think is going to be ultimately helpful. It's a nice balance. And then it also adds some accountability. So when the system is used for an investigation, you know, there has to be a documented reason and a connection to a case. And it additionally puts some guardrails on how the data ultimately can be used and shared, which is another really great thing, right? It can't be used to track people based on things like your identity or lawful activity. And if it's shared with other agencies, including out-of-state agencies, they have to agree to follow Connecticut's rules, right? So overall, it does keep the tool, but it makes sure that it's used in a focused and responsible and consistent way. And ultimately, it does cover a lot of things, as you said. You know, it's a big multi-part bill. And part of that is because this technology has also really grown really fast across Connecticut, and there hasn't been one clear statewide standard. So one thing that, you know, from our perspective, this law does really well is it brings consistency and it makes sure that every department is operating under the same rules so that officers know what's allowed and the public knows that there are clear boundaries. And it does, you know, as I named, keep this tool available for real public safety uses like investigations and, you know, finding missing people and executing warrants. And so on, but it also makes sure that there are some limits in place and clear rules around things like data storage and sharing. So we think it is truly a nice balance. It helps to maintain trust, and that ultimately is going to be critical for effective policing in the long run.
So, Chelsea, did I hear you correctly that states, other states, not Connecticut, states outside of us who want to use our technology have to agree to our rules? How do we do that? We can't tell states what to do.
So I think part of it is, it's a totally fair question. The bill is actually pretty straightforward in that regard. So if another agency wants to access Connecticut's data, specifically if it is a border state, right, they would have to formally request it and they would have to agree. Typically in writing, they would have to certify that they are going to, you know, follow our rules in the sense that, you know, this bill was passed. You have to comply with this bill if you want to access this data. And that means also, you know, for example, not using it to target certain people based on identities that they hold or lawful activity that they're practicing in. And if they don't agree to those terms, ultimately they don't get access in the first place. So it's really about setting the conditions on access, similar similarly to how agencies already share information through, you know, agreements or MOUs or task forces or things like that. So it does actually allow cooperation, but make sure that that data is handled responsibly once it does leave the state. And if it is a different kind of out-of-state agency, it isn't necessarily a border state, then that bar gets raised a little bit. And so there are things like, you know, if you would need a warrant, a judicial warrant, if you want to access that, you know, information, if it's not something that is being used to further a multi-jurisdictional task force, you know, purpose. So there's a lot of little elements that are part of the bill when it comes to sharing with other agencies or other entities. It's not ultimately about controlling other states, but just really setting conditions for using our data. Like with any other data sharing agreement, those are sort of the expectations and accountability that are built in.
So just so I have an understanding, Chelsea, if I'm in Massachusetts, I'm a Massachusetts police officer, we've got a multi-state search. We're looking for a stolen vehicle, kidnapping, what have you. How does that process now change with the license plate readers? If Massachusetts wants to contact a Connecticut municipality and say, hey, have you found this license plate attached to this car? It has to do with this. Is that still pretty seamless, or do they have to go through kind of a lengthier process with that formal request?
It's something that would still be seamless. The bill absolutely still allows that kind of cooperation. You know, if you're a Massachusetts officer, you're working a real case like a kidnapping or stolen vehicle, that's something that you can, you can still request access to Connecticut data or work through existing partnerships and task force. The only difference is that, you know, you actually have to agree to use the data for legitimate public safety purposes. And part of that is, right, following the rules that we have set out as part of this bill. So in really urgent situations, it's not that anything is necessarily being slowed down or blocked. It's really just making sure that, you know, we agree to use the data appropriately once we have that access.
And the storage, Chelsea, which, by the way, I appreciate you answering these questions. Chelsea Infinity Gonzalez, who is the Public Policy and Advocacy Director at the ACLU of Connecticut, storing it. So this law now means after how many days would the footage go away?
21 days.
21 days. Okay, so if a license plate reader picks up a car that has been implicated in a crime, we've got 21 days to access any cameras that would have picked it up. After that, it just goes away? Or is there kind of a back, like, is there like a back file or anything that police could add? And the only reason I say this, Chelsea, is because from a law enforcement standpoint, I would imagine that sometimes you don't get cracks in the case until months, sometimes years, and you realize, oh man, maybe we go back. I mean, that's one of the things with modern technology that police are able to even solve these cases years down the road. So is there any kind of a backup system or anything, or it's gone? It didn't exist after 21 days.
So part of that is the 21 days is really the default for general data. So that is really data that isn't connected to a case. So if a vehicle is actually tied to a crime, that's something different. The bill does allow that data to be kept longer if it's part of an active investigation or prosecution, or also if there's a warrant. So police aren't necessarily losing evidence that they need after 21 days, right? Anything connected to a real case can absolutely be retained. The limit is really about not storing everyone else's data indefinitely, especially when it's not tied to any sort of public safety need. That is something ultimately that we worked really hard to build into the bill, that balance. I think one of the key sort of distinctions is general data versus something that is more evidentiary, which is part of what you're describing. Like once it's part of a case, it can be retained, so investigators aren't necessarily losing anything that they actually need.
So but they would have to identify that it would be needed in an investigation within that 21 days. So if a murder takes place at a home and the car is then stolen and they go wherever they go, they would have to pull any of the data from that area within 21 days and store it, basically, right? They kind of have to, I would think, have to kind of work ahead. And I know I'm kind of giving you scenarios that you're like, you know, these aren't real. But I only from hearing cases that literally have taken 10, 15, sometimes more than that, years to crack. I'm just wondering, you know, was there a limit before? I guess that's a good question. Was there a limit before the 21 days, or is that pretty in line with what it used to be storage wise?
So the limit before, from my understanding, at least for some of the technology companies that some departments have been using, I believe their retention period is about 30 days, and some departments were keeping that information way longer. And so part of what this bill does, and there's always, you know, of course, trade-offs with any policy like this, is that it does set a reasonable baseline, that 21 days for general data, but still allowing the retention, data to be retained beyond that for things that are tied to an investigation or an active warrant or a prosecution. So they will have access to this data longer in terms of there being a backstop. It's not really a backstop, but it is, part of the balance that we're talking about, like making sure police have the tools they need for real cases while not storing large amounts of data on everyone indefinitely, especially if they haven't been suspected of anything or it's not connected to any sort of public safety need. It is true, in some instances, it may take, longer to solve a crime. I think part of this is that in practice, law enforcement also isn't only relying on this one tool alone. There are still other investigative methods and databases and evidence sources that are available that they also are using. And ultimately, this was also a bill that, we worked really closely with some law enforcement stakeholders on as well, right? So we did, consider feedback, and 21 days was something ultimately that we felt was workable from all sides.
Senate Bill 397, an act concerning democracy and government accountability, has officially been signed into law. In the legislation, there are significant changes to the use of license plate readers across our state. And so we're doing a deeper dive into that portion of this bill with Chelsea Infinity Gonzalez, Public Policy and Advocacy Director at the ACLU of Connecticut. And again, I really appreciate you, Chelsea, kind of diving into this with me, because quite frankly, not ignoring the rest of it at all, but I mean, this is really building on our Trust Act. This bill is really, to me, kind of reiterating, I think the Attorney General kind of said that. He's like, there's nothing really too new about, how we feel about ICE in our state and so on and so forth. But the license plate reader, to me, is the newest thing. Because, we're seeing more and more police departments have this type of technology in place, and there were concerns about it, a lot of reports about this earlier in this year and in this session. So here's another question I have is, wouldn't this be a system thing versus a personnel thing? So like the 21 days, for example, or how it gets stored, is that something you have to broker with the actual technology company? So let's just use Flock, for example, because that's probably the most well-known one. Say you've got a police department using Flock. Is that something you've got to broker with Flock, that they've got to delete that stuff after 21 days? Or is that something the police departments will have to manually do?
So it is something that Flock would have to sort of take care of on their end. And it's something that they also can comply with. Like companies like Flock Safety, they are able to set retention limits on their end. So if the retention limit were to be, say, for example, 14 days, they would sort of create that, folder on the back end, and they would make it so that when our agencies are interacting with their technology, they're able to, easily comply, no problem. And that data does sort of get purged or deleted after the fact. Obviously without a law like this one, rules like that can vary from department to department, or they can change over time. But regardless of the vendor or system being used, typically it is something that, you have to ensure that, your contract covers it, that the company is able to do it. Ultimately, you wouldn't be able to, or shouldn't be, right, like contracting with that company if that's not the case. But it ultimately will make sure that those consistent standards are followed, and it's something that the technology, absolutely can comply with.
So if you've got a company that doesn't want to comply with Connecticut law, does that mean the department has to drop them? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so they wouldn't, if they, didn't want to or weren't able to cooperate with our law, right, or comply with our law, then they wouldn't be able to operate in Connecticut or contract with agencies here. you know, the law does set rules for how this tech can be used, and any vendor that is working with a public agency in Connecticut has to ultimately agree to those terms as part of their contract. So if a company is saying, you know, I am refusing to comply with this, or, you know, if for whatever reason they just truly can't comply and there are other, you know, technology tech companies that can comply or are willing to, whether it's around the data retention or the access or the sharing, agencies ultimately simply wouldn't be able to use that system. And I will note that that's something that's pretty standard. Vendors do typically have to meet state requirements if they want to do business in our state.
Okay, so if police departments this morning decide, well, they can't decide, they have to do it. So the law says if they have to change it to 21 days, if the company that they are using says no, first of all, you're saying that that's probably not going to happen. They're probably going to comply. They're going to say, okay, that's the way it is, so we've just got to follow it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but if the company says no, we don't agree with that, it's got to be 30 days for whatever reason, the police department then, I would imagine, has to be tasked with either replacing it or dropping that technology, right? Because it's against the state law.
Yeah, ultimately they would have to you know, use a different system that complies with state law. But in practice, to your point, most of these companies do already have the ability to meet these kinds of requirements. These are things that are set, certain controls that are set and built into their technology. So it isn't about necessarily forcing departments to drop the tool. It's just making sure whatever system that they're using ultimately follows clear, consistent rules. And, you know, that's something that it won't take the tech away, right? But they do have to ensure that they are complying with the law.
And then last thing, Chelsea, was there anything in this legislation, this was a question from a listener, about the covers preventing plates to even be read? I believe those are illegal. Does this touch on that at all?
This is a great question. No, from my understanding, there's nothing in this bill that allows people or like touches on covering or obscuring their license plates. I think all existing laws that require them to be visible and readable are still relevant and still apply. This bill is really about how the data is used after it's collected or once it's collected, not necessarily changing anything with regard to drivers on the road.
Got it. Chelsea, I want to thank you so much for giving us the time. Again, Senate Bill 397, now signed into law. We appreciate you really doing a deeper dive about the significant changes when it comes to license plate readers. When does it go into effect? Like, is it effective immediately?
It is. So most parts of this bill are effective immediately. And now that the bill was signed into law yesterday, that means we're here. You know, it is now effective.
Okay. Chelsea, I appreciate you and the ACLU of Connecticut. Thank you for giving us the time on WICC.